All right, everyone, greetings. Thank you all for joining us. Here we are. It's a little bit different now. They have a new rule where I have to admit people. I'm a little distracted by that right at the beginning here. But that will proceed. So it's feel free to either have your cameras on or off. It's either way. I think it's a little, maybe slightly better for the beginning part where we're doing our meditation and so forth. If you just turn your cameras off, you know, in terms of the etiquette for this. But if you want to have it on, of course, it's fine. But we're going to be just doing a kind of a meditation. I'll be talking a little bit about the meditation first, and then we'll go ahead and begin. And this is the satsang. I should maybe just welcome you to that first of all. This is October 1st, 2020, and we're together here on the World Peace Diet satsang. This is our third one. We've been doing them on the first Thursday of the month now for a couple of months. This is the third month, with the whole idea being essentially to connect with each other and with the field of compassion and wisdom that encircles our planet and that also, I think, resides within our hearts, to connect with that, to reconnect with that, to nourish the inner wisdom that we all have within us and to support each other on the journey, on the adventure that we're on, this challenging adventure that we have going on, especially right now, I think. So that's why we started this a few months ago, because it seemed like there are more and more divisions within the vegan movement and just within our society that are created by the varying perceptions that people have about what's actually happening in the world. It's being exacerbated, I think, by the election that's going on right now and just the seeds that have been sown, really, of dissension in our society, not only in the United States, but I think globally. So I think more than ever, it's important for us to put those differences, if we can, to the side and reconnect with the radiant light of eternal life that actually is the only reality that binds us always, like fingers on the same hand. I'll be playing the piano now, and I always have that feeling. I'm so glad my fingers are friends with each other. You know, my ring finger doesn't say to the other finger, "Well, you're playing more notes than I am. I want more." You know, they're cooperating, and they're each one doing what they're supposed to be doing. So, in the same way, I think each one of us has our own unique gifts to be presenting to the world in this lifetime, and we'll be talking perhaps about that. So the basic flow here is that maybe we just have a short meditation together here in the beginning, and then I'll talk about a few things, and then we can open it up for your questions or comments, and then we'll close it. The longest I want to go is an hour. I know we all have a lot going on, so this is a little island we can have in the middle of the river of the rapids that we're going through the rapids, but we can take a break here and breathe a little bit. So it's important to do that, I think, every day. All right, so here we go. I'm going to go ahead and invite all of us to join together in a short meditation. I'll be accompanying myself on the piano. I'm sitting here at Yuma. Yuma is our piano we bought many years ago, and my best friend, besides Madeline, is Yuma. Oops, somebody wants to get admitted here, so let's see what I can do here. Abiding together in this present moment, just breathing letting go with every breath of any concerns that we may be having about our life, about this time, entering into this present moment. The only holy moment right now. And with every exhalation, we enter more deeply into this moment. And we give thanks for this beautiful time we have together, the safe space. We give thanks for the heart within us that is pumping the blood to every cell of our body. And the same heart that is filled with love for all living beings. This heart that is radiating peace, harmony, loving kindness, joy, and compassion to all living beings. So with every inhalation, now we engender in our heart a feeling of loving kindness. A yearning that others be happy and have all of the causes of happiness. And with every exhalation, we allow this feeling of love to radiate from our heart, filling the whole world. With the light of love, kindness, and respect, and goodwill for all living beings. We exclude no one from the sphere of our loving kindness. And we send this love also to ourselves. To the unique and beautiful being that we are. Abiding in our true home. Abiding in love. And with every inhalation, now we engender in our heart the feeling of compassion. This is the yearning that others be free from suffering and from all of the causes of suffering. And the yearning to act to relieve their suffering. And with every exhalation, we allow this light of compassion to radiate from our heart, filling the whole world with the light of compassion for all beings. We know that compassion encircles the earth for all beings, everywhere. And with every inhalation, we engender in our heart the feeling of joy, the great joy that needs no reasons in the outer world at all, the joy of being, the joy that we feel in the joy of others. And with every exhalation, we allow this feeling of joy to radiate from our heart in ever-expanding spheres of light, filling the whole world with the truth of infinite joy. The joy of being permeates the truth of all being. Finally, now with every inhalation, we engender in our heart the feeling of peace and harmony. This is the great peace that comes naturally when our minds and hearts are filled with love, compassion, and joy. And we are naturally at peace. So from our heart, we radiate peace to the whole world. And we see the earth now bathed in the light of peace and harmony, in the truth of peace. Ourselves to abide in our true home in love, in compassion, the highest form of love, in joy, in peace. Love, compassion, joy, and peace. Abiding in gratitude for this precious opportunity of our life, for this opportunity to grow in wisdom, in compassion, to learn, to love, to contribute our note, our voice, to the great song. Abiding in freedom, in the truth that what we are was never born and will never die. That what we are is eternal consciousness. Beyond the clouds of illusion, free and radiant, that all the challenges that we face are for learning. And so now we take a moment to enter more deeply into the silence. To connect more deeply with the unique mission, the unique ministry, the unique purpose of our life. Listening. Listening together in the silence of our hearts and minds. We give thanks for each other, for every precious being. Together on this call, we give thanks knowing that if we are on this call, then we are responding to the call. Within every cell of our being to awaken and to heal, to be part of the healing and awakening of humanity on this earth. We send our love to all the animals. We feel our kinship with the beautiful geese and all the birds, to the beautiful fishes, the sharks, all the fish and all the water animals, to the foxes and beavers and deer and all the other animals on land, to all the insects, butterflies and bees, to the whole web of life celebrating here. The beautiful earth, magnificent in her abundance, in her patience. We feel our connection with the infinite presence of heaven, the eternal life. To the source of our life. May all beings be happy and at peace. May we all be free. And may we realize the original brightness of our own minds and hearts. And continue every day to build a more enlightened society, a world that cares for everyone. Through the presence of the infinite love that is the source of all life, we give thanks knowing this is so. So it is. Well, thanks everyone for joining us. It's fantastic to be able to be together, and I'd like to go ahead and maybe just share a few thoughts. Remember that you are always welcome to ask a question. If you have something you'd like to have me discuss, you can press *6. I believe it is on your phone, if you're listening by phone, or you can unmute yourself, raise your hand. I can see pretty much, I think, everyone's who's here somehow. All right, so great. I think as we keep going on and on and on with this pandemic, that we're finding a lot of people are feeling more and more frustrated with the way it doesn't seem to resolve. We know, of course, that before 2020 came along, that it was pretty unsustainable how we were living. We've been devastating animals, ecosystems, each other, really, in many ways. Tremendous inequality and injustice. And so overlaid on that, now we have the challenges, I guess is the best word, and difficulties that we're facing economically, politically, and so forth with the situation right now. So I want to talk about something that just came up for me over the last week or two, the idea of grace. And I think the idea of grace is something that's very interesting. We don't think about it that often. I don't think, at least I don't think about grace in those terms that often, but I was interviewed by a spiritual center in Ohio, and they wanted me to talk about grace. And so I said, okay, I'll talk about that. And in doing a little bit of thinking about it and discussing the idea, I realized that it's very healthy, I think, to all of us perhaps to reflect on our lives and on the grace that we have received. And we're still receiving in our life. We have a tendency, perhaps, I know I do, to see the problems and the challenges and the difficulties that I face or that the world faces, and to forget to see the grace that is always present, the heart that's always beating inside and giving energy, and the whole autonomic nervous system that knows what to do, and the immune system that knows what to do, and our body knows what to do. There's a tremendous amount of intelligence invested in us, in all living beings. And one of the things I've talked about, you've probably heard me say it, that when scientists really go deeply into trying to understand cells, one of the analogies they use when they become so amazed at the enormous complexity of the trillions actually of cells in our body, that each cell is more complex than New York City. That's New York City before the pandemic. I mean, how it is now. So, this tremendous complexity. And that's not just true of us, of course. That's true of cows and pigs and chickens and, all living beings. There's an enormous investment of intelligence in us. And I think just reflecting on that, the tremendous gift of intelligence in our bodies to mobilize and move and allow us to think and write and dance and talk and create and reflect and meditate and so forth. How can we live our lives to justify, I think is a good word, and to be worthy of this enormous intelligence that has been invested in us? I feel that really strongly. You know, one of the things that I think of when I think of grace, for me personally, what I'd like to do is maybe just talk a little bit about the grace I've experienced in my life, a few things, and then maybe open it up for your thoughts. Because I feel that I have just really been given a massive dose of grace in this lifetime, this particular incarnation. Spiritual teachers have come to me. All so amazing. And one of the things I noticed when I was thinking about it is that grace seems to manifest the more we practice, right? It seems like the more we practice whatever it is we want to develop, the more grace, more the universe comes along and supports us in that. And so I don't know what I was thinking before I got born, but somehow I was born into Concord, Massachusetts. Some of you have heard me say this. And I feel like already that was a huge grace for me. And maybe we can think about that. Think about the situation of our birth and our life. And sometimes what we think of as grace, it doesn't look like it's that great. Maybe we think, well, I had parents that were kind of harsh or whatever it was. But maybe there was something, there was grace within that in some way. But I feel there was a tremendous amount of grace for me because it, partly just on the surface level of just this feeling of the idea of a revolution. Concord was the seat of the American Revolution. And I just kind of love the idea, if there's a situation that's intolerable or oppressive, we should change it. We should somehow speak up, stand up, express ourselves, and work together to make it better, make things better, that we can do that. That's proactive, and it's a calling, I think, that we have. But the neat thing about being raised in Concord was, on the other hand, there was the Transcendentalist Revolution 100 years later, or maybe 80 years later, with Emerson and Thoreau and Alcott. And so I was raised, I learned to swim in Walden Pond, Thoreau School, Alcott School, all this. And so there was this feeling of the Transcendentalists. And when I went away to college, I realized that what they did, their main thing was they brought Eastern religious traditions to the West. And so because I was very interested in understanding my heritage, my father owned the newspapers, and so here in around Concord, so I was always involved in the political life and cultural life at a very deep level, deeper than most people, just because the newspaper kind of opened the door to know all the leaders, and we were always involved intimately with what was going on in the community. And so I got very interested in knowing what these guys and women too, there was Margaret Fuller, other, both men and women, were on to when they were interested in the Bhagavad Gita and the Tao Te Ching and the Upanishads and the profound teachings from Asia. And so when I started diving into that, I realized that, wow, this is amazing. I mean, there's so much wisdom besides the Christian tradition that I was raised in, which, quite honestly, it didn't really inspire me that much. But once I think there's good things in it. But what I really got on fire actually was learning about meditation and this idea that we can attain enlightenment. And so when my brother and I decided to leave home and go on a spiritual pilgrimage, that came out of this. I think on some level it was this discovery of Ramana Maharshi, who in India, through all of this, who said, you should just find out who you are. Ask, who am I? And so I remember Ed and I, we walked down the road, and we had some fresh baked cookies from my mother in a little backpack, and we had told them we were going to walk to California, from Concord, Massachusetts. And I know they thought we were kind of, they didn't think we were crazy, but my father was always a great adventurer, and he gave us his blessing and quoted Thoreau and said, every man must march to the beat of the drum that he hears. And even though I was really supposed to take over the family business and I wasn't doing it, I know he was disappointed. But he loved us enough to just say, go forth and see what happens, and let us go. And we went off with no money into the great unknown. I remember that. We just walked west. We finally got to Buffalo after about a month and a half, and it was starting to get really cold. So we headed south, and we decided not to go to California. It was too cold. So we just walked all the way to Alabama, and we walked for many months. And really, I have to say, when I think about that, like, we had no reason to be happy. We had nothing. We were completely alone in a sort of what I guess you would say was a kind of dangerous world, you know, walking every day, completely vulnerable. And yet I felt this tremendous joy bubbling up in my heart all the time because I was living my life. And I think when we live our own life, when we connect with our intuition, which guides us to live our life, it doesn't mean other people are going to agree with us, they're going to like what we're saying, like what we're doing. And in our case, they didn't like it. Most people thought we were a little bit loony, but we were living our life. And that of itself was enough to create joy. And then there were miracles that were happening, really. I mean, when I think back on it, it was like all kinds of things would happen because we put ourselves in a position for these things to happen. You know, when we didn't have any food, I remember one time and we were, you know, it was one of the only times we really didn't have food because it was autumn. So we were able to get apples and zucchinis and things from people's gardens. We were able to survive okay, usually. But this one time we didn't have any food. We were walking along this road and we were like wondering where we're going to get some food. And there was a nice big sandwich wrapped up by the side of the road. And I remember we picked it up. We thought, you know, this is how it works. You know, I remember we went into this church in Eastern Kentucky. I mean, Eastern Kentucky, the people were unbelievably poverty stricken. A lot of them didn't even have wooden floors. They just had dirt on their cabins, dirt floors, and they had nothing. But they would let us come in and sleep on the floor, on their dirt floor, or and the little bit of what they had, they would give. They were very loving. They thought they were pretty fundamentalist Christian, and they thought we were angels. They thought, well, these are people, you know, we didn't look like angels, I don't think, but I mean, we were kind of hippies. We had kind of long hair and everything, but we were walking, just meditating. And so we were somehow protected. I remember we went into this one church. It was a fundamentalist church. Like we did this a lot. We would go to these churches just to sleep on the floor of the church or if we could. And I remember, they wanted us to speak to the Sunday school kids. And so we did. And I remember telling the kids, you know, what Jesus said is true. Seek ye first the kingdom of heaven and everything else shall be added unto you. You know, the most important thing is your spiritual path. Focus on that. Live your life in order to be a force for love in the world and you'll be taken care of. And I remember then they took up a donation. They gave us $30. This was back in 1975. That was like a lot of money in 1975. So we walked out and we got to the little restaurant where we hadn't had any lunch. And I remember lunch for two people cost about maybe $12 or $8. I don't know. It didn't cost very much. And so we gave the waitress, you know, the whole $30, whatever it was. And we just thought, you know, we don't want to hang on and save some for tomorrow. You know, like Jesus said, let tomorrow take care of tomorrow. Right now, focus on what you're doing. Focus on the spiritual path and tomorrow will take care of tomorrow. And so we were practicing this every day. And sometimes we would we would end up in jails or rescue missions. Sometimes we would end up in places that were not savory at all, like really pretty dark. But we kept doing our practice of, you know, who am I, and doing the best we could to send love and help people around us if we could. And eventually we ended up at the farm in Tennessee. And we were there, and we weren't really sure where to go from there. We had walked quite a few months by the time we reached the farm in Tennessee. And that was, as you all know, where I realized about vegetarianism and veganism. Actually, no one knew that word then, but I stopped eating meat because of these people. And I remember the farm was about 900 people, and they were all meditating on Sunday morning together. And so we went, and Stephen Gaskin was giving the talk. So we went to the talk and the meditation on Sunday morning like we did. We were there for a few weeks. And I remember this one Sunday afternoon, we were just sitting in this big, they only had one big building, the schoolhouse, and we were sitting in there alone. And we were just in chairs looking out into this big room. It was empty, an empty room. But all of a sudden, the room became alive in a certain way. I don't tell the story that often, but I just thought I'd mention it now because it's kind of interesting. And it was like the room became alive with beings. There were like these beings in the room. We could see them. I mean, we couldn't see them. We could feel them. It was like the shimmering quality that came over the room. And I looked out and I kind of whispered over to Ed. I said, Ed, you know, you see these beings? I mean, there's beings in here. And I've never experienced that before or since, really. I mean, it was like palpable. You could just like see they were there. And he goes, yeah, I know, I can see them too. So we didn't know what to do. We were just kind of sitting there like, whoa, this is really amazing. And then and I could feel them getting closer and closer. And then this one, I had to feel it like touched me right here on the forehead. And then kind of faded back again. And then the room gradually just became like a normal room again, you know. And then about 5 minutes later, the door opened and this guy and his wife walked in. Remember the guy, because he said his name is John. And I found out later, everybody called him Big John. And Big John came up to us and he said, all right, I'm John. And we're from Huntsville, Alabama. My wife, and he said, I can't remember her name, but he said, you know, we just got married and we were driving to our honeymoon in Florida, but I got a message that we should go to the farm in Tennessee. And I said, honey, I know, you know, we're supposed to go south to Florida, but I'm getting this message we should go north to Tennessee. And then we'll go on our honeymoon. So he was actually postponing the honeymoon to come up to the farm. He said, I think you're the ones I'm supposed to see. And so I looked at him like, wow, okay, good, here we are, you know. So I was sitting in this chair, and he came up behind me, and he put his hands, like, on my head, and he closed his eyes. And when he did it, I have to honestly say, I felt this enormous energy moving in my body when he did that. And then he said, I have a vision for you. I see a man with a staff, and he will be nurturance for you. And I remember going, wow, okay, a man with a staff, and he'll be nurturance. And then he said, the other thing I saw, I see a great love you will have for a woman somewhere. And so I said, oh, okay. And I was just a kid, you know. I was just like 22 years old or something. I just turned 22. But, you know, we were walking on this pilgrimage. And so anyway, so then he left. But he told us that there was this Zen center in Huntsville, Alabama, where he was from. He mentioned that. And then that kind of planted a seed in our mind. And we thought, you know, let's keep going south. Let's go to that Huntsville Zen Center. That sounds like a neat place. So I guess about a week later, we walked all the way from Tennessee down to Alabama. We got there. And we got to this Zen Center. And the Zen Center, for us, it was perfect because what we wanted to do was meditate. We just only wanted to meditate. And so there was a guy there who had a room in the Zen Center. He didn't live there, but he kind of rented it. And he said, you can stay in my room. You don't have to pay anything. I just love it that you guys want to meditate, so you can have a place. And so we could stay there in this room, in this Zen meditation center. And then my grandmother, who was taking pity on us, would send us $25 every week. So that was enough to live on. That was enough to buy food. And so we did. So for quite a few months, we were living just, and we would meditate. We'd get up at, we'd start meditating at 6. We would sit with everybody from 6 to 7 in the morning. And then we would sit from 7 in the morning till noon, have lunch for 2 hours, and then meditate from noon, from 2 till 5, and then take a little break for dinner. And then we would meditate from like 7 to 9 in the evening. And we did this every day. We were meditating like 12 hours a day or something. It was really intense. And we were just sitting, just meditating. We were going, who am I? It was really rigorous, but we were so passionate. We didn't want to do anything but wake up spiritually. We didn't want to be distracted. We didn't want to go to work. We didn't want to be a slave in a system. We just wanted to wake up. But as the weeks went on, we kept thinking more and more, it would be so good if we had a teacher, you know, someone could guide us. We're just on our own meditating kind of. And although there were a few people there in the Zen Center that were kind of helping and that were experienced, but then they said, there's going to be a Zen master from California coming out, and he's going to lead a retreat. And they showed us this picture of this old guy, shaved head, and he was standing there, and he was holding a staff. And I said, Ed, there he is. the man with the staff, he's coming. And sure enough, he came. We got there in January. This was like around May or June he showed up. And he was very powerful guy, actually. And we just fell in love with him as a teacher. I mean, he was very, he was like a very inspiring person and very non-dual teaching. And so to make a long story short, I eventually ended up studying with his disciple, who was a woman, in Atlanta for about 2 years, and then came out to California and lived in a Tibetan Buddhist center for a few years also. And I was very blessed there. I had this feeling to come to California, and I wanted to see him, and I was in touch with him, but I was still in Atlanta, Georgia at that point. And I wanted to get my master's degree at this place called the California Institute of Asian Studies. And I ended up in San Francisco with no money. And where was I going to stay? I was going to stay in the Tenderloin. You know, it was like this terrible situation kind of looked like. I mean, I was just going to have to find work, and I had no place to stay. But right next to this place, this California Institute of Asian Studies, there was a Tibetan Buddhist center. And I went over there and meditated with them. And even though there was a long waiting list for people to get a room there, they let me in. There was this tiny room the size of a closet, and they said, "You can stay here." I said, "Great." So I was in this. I had a room for $60 a month, and I remember, you know, and I stayed there, and I worked my way up, you know, until I was actually became the Lama's personal attendant. I translated a book from Tibetan into English and was able to present it personally to the Dalai Lama, and he came and gave us the Bodhisattva Refuge, and so I really had amazing experiences through the Tibetan tradition there. And these teachers, though, they were amazing. I mean, I was able to study with some of the highest lamas of the Tibetan tradition. I was able to go on a long retreat up in the woods of Oregon. I was all by myself in a little retreat cabin for probably, it was for several months, just alone. They would come and ring a bell and then put some food in a box about 50 yards away, and I'd hear the bell. I'd go get the food. I never saw a human being, you know, for many, many weeks. And I got into a totally different state of consciousness. I was doing a practice where you do 100,000 prostrations. It was really rigorous. I was meditating, and then I was doing these prostrations. You go down on your knees, and then all the way out on your stomach, and then back up again. And you have to do 100,000 of those. It's really hard work. And so I was doing that every day, and just this little cabin in the woods of Oregon. And I started having all kinds of visions and experiences of healings. And I'll tell you another time. But I remember finally I decided to leave that retreat for just a couple hours and just come out and say hello to the people who are overseeing, giving me the food all the time. And I remember walking out, and it was such a weird feeling to actually leave my little womb after all these weeks. And I remember walking through the woods, and all of a sudden I just went out of my body, and I was up, and I was watching my body walk along this pathway. And I realized, you know, I'm not this body. I mean, this is the whole point. You know, we think we're these bodies, but we're not. We are the being that makes this body possible. And when we understand that, we can heal anything in this body. We can heal anything in our relationships. We are the force that enlivens the being. And so I realized through that, eventually I ended up continuing on with the Tibetan practice, and eventually ended up deciding to study with the Zen master, Donald Gilbert, the man with the staff. He lived in Oakland. And right at that point when I decided to do that, a house was right across the street from where he lived, just opened up. And so I could move in there and study with him. I ended up studying with him for probably 30 years, 25. I mean, he lived to be about 97 years old, right up until just a few years ago. And so he's been a tremendous, you know, presence in my life all these years. And but the idea is I feel like I've been given so much, you know, so many such deep, loving spiritual teachers and teachings, to be able to go on long retreats, like as a Zen Buddhist monk in Korea, to be in a silent retreat for 3 months, or these other retreats, or going on Tibetan retreats where we would fast, you know, every other day for 21 days. We did many really profound retreats and experiences. And I just feel that grace has been like showered upon me in a certain way. And then later, you know, then meeting Madeline in Switzerland, you know, that whole story again was another manifestation of amazing grace. You know, I went over to Russia just to try to be a force for peace. And I was giving these concerts for peace in Russia back in 1990 in Moscow. And then I went to Armenia, and it was really interesting because I went to Armenia and I gave a concert there. And I just read yesterday about there's now a war between the Armenians and the Azerbaijanis over Nagorno-Karabakh. And I remember when I was there in 1990, they were telling me what a terrible situation it was and how they wish they could have peace because this is the disputed territory between Armenia and Azerbaijan. And I've always been glad that they didn't have a war yet. But I remember going there and I was supposed to play a concert and there was no concert set up. And then they set one up. It had me play at this big rock concert. They had a rock concert with about 20,000 people. And after the rock concert was over, they brought me out on the stage and they said, "We have a piano player from America. Do you want to hear him?" And everybody said, "Sure, yeah, we want to hear him." So I started playing the piano for this all the people in this, and you know, just my own music just coming through me. And I was so inspired by this feeling of going to, this was the Soviet Union, you know, I was in the Soviet Union and we were deadly enemies with each other, but I said, you know, this is music for peace. We can have peace and harmony on this earth together, you know, and they all cheered. And then I played a piece of music, and then after I played the music, instead of clapping like they clapped like normal, but instead of clapping like we do, they clapped in rhythm, you know, that like the whole place was boom, clapping like together in rhythm. And that was an amazing experience to receive that. And so that inspired me even more. And I played another piece, and then they clapped even more like that. And then I played a third one, and they did it even more, you know. So there was this tremendous waves pouring of love and peace, it seemed, through the music and through the aspiration of the people to get beyond the divisions that, you know, the war and what divides us politically and the corporations and all this nonsense, to realize that it's one life living through all of us. I think we know that. And music, art, and spirituality can help us, I think, to connect with that. You know, and then after that, I remember meeting my brother in Germany, and we traveled around Europe for a little while. And we came into Switzerland after going through France on our way to Italy. And we had like no money. I lived in Europe for like 2 months on about like $200 or whatever. I'm some ridiculous amount of money. I just didn't spend money. We camped out every night. I never stayed in a hotel or anything. I just stayed in the woods somewhere, or I stayed somewhere in a park in the city or whatever. And, but I remember, I gotta let somebody in here. But I remember we were on this train through Switzerland on the way to, and we thought we'd spend a few days in Switzerland. It's a beautiful country, but we thought, well, where are we going to get off? So we ended up getting off at a place called Spiez, so a little town near Interlaken. And so in the evenings, I discovered they had a Waldorf school, and so I started playing the piano. They had a grand piano in there, and so I was playing the piano just to myself for a few hours with my brother. Or maybe not a few hours, maybe just an hour, while my brother relaxed at the restaurant. And the third evening, the last evening we were there, I think it was the third or fourth evening before we headed to Italy, I went in and there was all these people in there. And so I played the piano for all these people. I thought, well, they were doing an art gallery opening. And this woman came over and she said, "Gosh, you know, that music is, who wrote that?" And so I said, "Oh, it's my own original music." And she asked, "Do you have any cassettes of your music?" And I said, "Yeah, I have a cassette, and if you give me your address, I'll mail you one." And because I did have one in my backpack, I thought I could mail her one, actually. So she gave me her address, and I did actually mail it to her the next day, and we left and went on to Italy. But then the woman, who was Madeline, ended up, when I get back to the United States, I decided to live in a Volkswagen bus. I lived for 3 years on the road in a Volkswagen bus, an old 1971 Volkswagen bus, traveling around doing concerts. I mean, talk about, again, It's like when we make ourselves vulnerable, I think we get more grace. So I was very vulnerable. I didn't know what was going to happen. But anyway, I got a letter from this woman in Switzerland, and she said, I really liked your cassette. And she sent me money, like a few hundred dollars to send her 20 cassettes. And she started promoting it through the music stores around Switzerland. And this went on for about a year and a half. She kept, you know, sending me cash, and I would send her cassettes, and she would sell them in the bookstores and music stores in Switzerland. And then she said, "You need to make a CD." And I said, "I do want to make a CD, but I need an artist." And she said, "Well, I'm an artist. Maybe I could come over." And I said, "I have no place to put you. You know, I'm living in a Volkswagen bus." And she said, "Don't worry. I've lived in grass shacks and Kenya and longhouses in Borneo, and I've lived in vans traveling all over Australia, New Zealand. I won't be any trouble, don't worry." And so when I met her, I found out she came over, and we, you know, fell in love, got married, and we've been together now for 30 years, just about, and 28 years, I guess. But I think what she told me was so interesting was that when she heard me play at that Waldorf school in Switzerland, she heard the music. Because she, from the time she was 5 years old, she had always been yearning to find a recording of some music that she kept hearing in her mind. She kept hearing this particular melody and chord pattern, and she just thought, man. And so she, with her first husband, they actually owned a music store in Basel, and they were always selling music. Her whole life was music. So she was just listening, always looking for that music. And then she said, "When you came in and you sat at the piano, you played that music that I've been trying to find since I was 5 years old." I can't tell this without crying. And so, grace, you know, grace comes in. It leads us. It guides us. It opens us up to all kinds of possibilities. I think the most important thing is that we realize that our lives are filled with grace, that we're not victims. That's the reason I'm so strenuously opposed to this whole COVID narrative, because it makes us into victims. The basic idea is we're a victim. Oh, these outer forces are going to get us. They're out to get us all the time. And I think when we come back home to our hearts and live our lives from our true nature, then we're open to grace. We're open to being ourselves a vehicle of grace for other people, that we can help others. We can be because I've been given so much, I have to let it go through me somehow. I can't bottle it up inside of me and be quiet and not say something or not do something. So that's why Madeline and I have traveled. Gosh, you know, I realized the other day we've given over 4,000 concerts in 50 countries and all 50 states and all six continents, and, you know, and promoting veganism. And I realized, gosh, no one's come close to doing that. So it just was natural. I never thought about it, but it just seemed like we have to pay the kindness that we've been given. And who more needs that kindness than animals, right? Animals need our kindness more than any. I mean, really, they're so horribly abused, and they don't even, we don't even think about it. I mean, we want justice and peace for ourselves, but we abuse them. So the grace, I guess that's the basic idea, the grace that can come into our lives, I think, when we see it and when we take time to feel into our own personal history. And I think we all have, if we go through our lives, we all have times where we've been blessed by someone or by an act or by who knows what. And maybe we forget about that. But I think to take time to be consciously grateful for the presence of grace in our lives and to let that grace flow through us to others, to be a force for grace. And to me, that's the real contagious quality. You know, this idea of contagion, everybody's wearing a mask because we're afraid that they're going to give us some kind of bad vibe, some cooties, some kind of bad germs. And to me, that's the opposite. This is like a demonic program to make us not see each other, not love each other, not care for each other, not have solidarity and harmony and kinship with each other, to be separate and afraid of each other. And really, to be contagious, I want everybody to catch what I have. Yeah, here, come close. Let me give you a hug. I want you to catch the love and joy and grace that I have, right? I'm not going to wear a mask and not speak and not be seen and keep my grace to myself. It's like, you know, they find that wearing masks, it just concentrates a lot of germs and viruses, and it's actually more unhealthy for yourself, and it's more unhealthy for everybody around you, because it multiplies all the germs, and you're actually giving a lot more germs out when you wear a mask than if you didn't wear a mask. And you're hurting people more when you don't wear a mask than if you did wear one. So that's the irony of this whole thing. That's the way it is. That's the way the universe works. The more we give of ourselves in a loving way to be a contagious force for kindness and peace and harmony, the more that it comes into our life. So I've gone on too long here, but I wanted to share just a few little tidbits and thank all of you, because I think we are together on this planet right now for a reason. And I think the reason is to be contagious of our joy and peace and harmony and wisdom that we can share with each other and not allow ourselves to be made into victims and to be afraid, because fear really is how we're controlled. And the animals need us not to be afraid. The animals need us to be courageous, to be open, to speak up for them. All right, so that's my sharing. And again, I apologize, I kind of went on a little bit too long because I really wanted this to not go too late. I kind of promised Madeline we wouldn't go too late. But I can maybe take one question or comment. Maybe I'm not sure if that's a good idea. But I also like to play a little music to kind of close our time. So just let me know if anyone really has something you really want to share, go right ahead. But I do want to kind of honor the commitment of time here. I don't know where the time goes. It kind of disappears. But much love to all of you. Thanks so much. So if anyone wants to say something, feel free. Otherwise, our hearts can speak. Okay, Antoinette, you're now unmuted, I think. Yes, go ahead.
I just wanted to thank you so much. Your story was exactly what I needed to hear, and I just feel completely uplifted. So thank you.
All right, Antoinette. It's so wonderful to see you, and thanks for shining your beautiful light into the world. Yeah, it's really
Will, this is Lily. I just wanted to tell you, after the meditation in the silence, I felt that there was a being looking at me, and it was Princess Madeline Tuttle Pussy Willow smiling at me in my face. And it,
that's your cat.
And then you told your wonderful story, which is in the World Peace Diet, but I love hearing it in person. Oh, it's so riveting, so beautiful. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks, Lily. Yeah, that's the beautiful little vegan cat that Lily has up in Northern California that she named Madeline Tuttle Pussy Willow. All right. Well, gosh, you know, I don't know where the time goes. It's really so precious to be able to share a satsang. As you know, a satsang is a time to abide together in the truth, in righteousness, in loving kindness for all living beings. So I'd like to just thank all of you for your presence here in this beautiful time that we've been had together. I'll just go ahead and play a short piece of music. And this will be recorded if you want to hear it later or share it with anybody. I'll have it up on the usual World Peace Diet facilitators page, and go forth and bring love and peace into our world. So this is just a short piece of music, and I think I'll play a waltz, just a short waltz that, to me, you know, waltz is the 3/4 time. There's something about a waltz that I think lifts up our spirits, and I think lifting up our spirits is always a good thing to do, and I'm really grateful for the muse that brings music into our world, because music is a power that is at the heart of the cosmos. The rhythms and melodies and harmonies are without beginning and without end. Okay. Well, again, much love to you, all of you, and thanks again for joining us. And let's stay in touch. We do have a third Thursday World Peace Diet Facilitator Circle, as usual, for those of you who are part of that. And in the meantime, please stay in touch through our website or and look forward. We'll probably, hopefully, do this the first Thursday next month as well. As we go into November, December, there's going to be, I think, a big need for harmony and peace and grace. So much love to all of you. Thanks for shining the grace of your beings into my life. And Madeline also sends her love as well. And we hold you in our hearts. And have a beautiful rest of the evening and rest of the week and rest of the month. Much love to all of you. Thanks so much. Much love. Much love. Thank you. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.